All right.
In the words of the great Bill O'Reilly, fuck it, we'll do it live.
Fuck it, we'll do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. Ladies and gentlemen, another special episode, Hyperconscious Podcast meets Conversations Change Lives Podcast. Oh, I said it right today.
Yes.
We have a special guest
merger
with us today.
Mr. Ryan Moore. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hyperconscious / Conversations Change Lives Podcast. Hyperconscious Podcast is all about digging deep, becoming aware of things so that you have the power to change them. If you'd like to, the Conversations Change Lives podcast is like being a fly on the wall, listening to a great conversation. The whole premise is never underestimate the power of a truly great conversation. It's what we talk about shapes what we think about shapes what we act, and what we act on determines the quality of our life. So we have a very special guest today, as Kevin mentioned, Mr. Ryan Moore, straight from the West Coast. Just to give a little context, Ryan Moore and I have been best friends for a very long time now. And played video games together, partied a lot in college together. There's been many, many good memories, and so this is going to be a real treat for you today.
Right on.
Amen to all that. Thank you for having me, guys.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it.
Thank you for coming on. So you up and moved across the country.
I did.
Yes. Can you tell us about why, like, what was, like, the final straw that made you just say, fuck it, I can do this. I can just do this. And give everybody a backstory of why you actually moved across the country.
Okay. So, quick backstory is that at some time in high school, I made up my mind that I wanted to pursue a career in acting. You know, seeing people on film and like, hey, I can do that. And then my parents said, you know, you have to go to school for 4 years. We're going to pay that. And you got to do that. And then you can do what you want to do. So I was like, okay, great. So I went to school, got a degree in kinesiology. And I made sure to graduate on time. And then my goal was to, leave at the end of that summer. And I told myself, and I knew that, a potential trap would be that if you keep delaying for whatever reason, life could happen, things could get in the way, and then I might never actually do it.
Right.
So I was so gung-ho about it that I actually got, arrested that summer for a party that I was accused of supplying alcohol to underage kids.
I remember that.
Yeah. And Mr. Jake Dexter got his ass really arrested.
Hmm.
But anyway, I had a court date and I chose to take a, what do they call that here? A quaff? Some weird name where you basically like, you know, give up your right to fight the thing and you get put on probation. And I was like, yeah, screw all that. And I moved with a car, and this guy,
yes,
Alan, came with me in the beginning, and we took that road trip, made it in 4 days, and I you know, tried to start a life in Los Angeles, which I still live there today.
Mm-hmm. awesome. So I remember when I was a sophomore in high school, Ryan and I first became friends in law class.
Oh,
law class.
You were
which Hutch? You were in.
Okay. Oh fuck yeah! Shout out to Hutch.
Shout out to Hutch.
Yeah.
So this is gonna get juicy. I love it. So Kevin was actually in this law class. What a small world.
Shit.
And this is when me and Ryan first met, and he told me that he wanted to be an actor, and I said, "You can do it, man."
Oh.
I remember.
You did. Always been to wind at my sails.
Amen. I appreciate that, man. Hell yeah. And that's just something that I think is really important. Is just like everyone. At some point in their life, somebody believed in them, and I think it makes all the difference if it's at the right time. And you never know if you can be that person for someone else. And I know Ryan's been that for me at times and vice versa. So I always talk about the importance of the dream team, and it's crazy. You know, we're back in law class back sophomore year when we're, 17 and 16, and now we're here doing a podcast.
That's crazy, isn't
it? Over 10 years later, about 11 or 12 years later, and we've come so far, but we've also, you know,
not moved at all.
Yeah, well, geographically. Well, he has.
I mean, like,
yeah,
we've made it, but on like the grand scale and the grand, like, you know what I mean? On the train tracks, we're only on like the first or second stop.
Oh, of course, we're just getting started.
Ways to go.
Just took
us a long time to start.
Yeah,
and that's usually how it goes.
Well, I think that's what your 20s are for. You know, building a really strong foundation for whatever you do. It's trying to figure out what you're here for and then building a strong foundation of knowledge and awareness to like build a skyscraper on that. And if your foundation isn't sound, you're not going to be able to build anything big.
That's the best analogy, man. You can use that with anything. I love using that for relationships.
Yeah.
If you have a weak foundation, you can't build, you know, you can't cultivate something on top of it.
Yeah.
Cultivate makes me sound super smart too.
It does.
And
it's a good word.
Yeah, it's a good word, man. Yeah. You don't hear
like
it often.
Gardening term.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, anything above three syllables, and I'm impressed.
Really?
Yeah. So back to Ryan. You have been living in LA for how many years now, man?
Oh, my God. It's five.
5 years.
Wow. Yeah, five plus. Five and almost a half.
So I'm all about being the best of both worlds. I would argue that Ryan is that, you know. I've always considered him sort of a modern-day philosopher. A lot of us don't think of ourselves as philosophers, but really what philosophy is just talking about life. And really, Jim Rohn basically says it's not the wind, it's how we set our sail that determines the direction and therefore the destination.
Did you have that quote in mind before?
I love that quote, man.
Did you say it because he said you were the wind in his sails?
Maybe.
Subconsciously,
not consciously.
Yeah.
Deep. Oh, there it is. And I do think that the wind blows on us all, and it's the set of the sail, and that's your philosophy. So I think that a lot of us would do better to be more philosophical. And so Ryan and I have had deep, deep, deep conversations, our whole friendship. I mean, mm-hmm. We always do. And I guess you represent what I would consider the best of both worlds, as in you grew up in a small town, but you did have huge dreams that in a lot of ways people thought were impossible or crazy or that you'd never actually follow through on them. But you actually did follow through in the sense that you actually went out there and have been putting in the reps for 5 years. Mm-hmm. You may not be where you want to be, but mm-mm. What is your take on that experience? And like, you know, you at least won't have that what if.
Yeah. 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 Well, that's a loaded question. Let me see if I can do the best I can with that. So moving out there, with kind of the background that you get, and I would say a pretty stable, comfortable environment that I grew up in, you know, pretty much never having to go without. You're kind of, you know, taught and brought up. You can do what you want to do. I was very vision oriented, as I imagine most people that kind of make that move to that city are. And what it does is it allows you in the beginning to, you know, put up with a lot of shit. I was without my own place for about 2.5 years. You know, I slept on kitchens, couches, did all that stuff. I've worked in, more jobs than I can count out there. One I did with, Nate Smithson there is collecting voting signatures, which by the way, was near criminal. I made like $1,000 in 2 days. That was really nice. Yeah. Collecting signatures.
Yeah.
But you know, just kind of grinding and hustling it out, and you always have that vision and that goal in mind. And then just my personal take on it, rounding about 5 years now, is the goal starts to kind of wane away a little bit, and you're left with, you know, the life that you're living. And
are you saying when the visualization wanes away, or the motivation?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, because from my personal experience, I obviously didn't go out there and book, you know, a series regular right away. Right. I have friends that did, and their life looks completely different. But I'm more the average case. I mean, I'll tell you this about the entertainment industry in Hollywood right now. I firmly believe that, I think Denzel Washington said this, you stick around the barbershop long enough, you're going to get a haircut. I truly believe that out there. If you really want it and you really want to put in all the time and sacrifice right. absolutely everything, you'll get your shot. You absolutely will. I mean, it's hard not to. But what I'm in the process of is juggling how much am I giving up versus what the result is. And even it's a perceived result too. It's what I think it's going to be.
Yeah.
I still don't know what that actually entails. I mean, one of my worst nightmares is the vision of if you were to achieve some sort of level of fame and notoriety, but you don't have any close friends around that really get you. Mm. And then all of a sudden everybody sees you through this other lens, and you can't ever meet a genuine, or I mean, imagine it would be very hard to cultivate genuine relationships
that weren't based on that new perception of you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you know, that's kind of fear. I mean, I always make this joke too. I if you would ask me when I was a kid, would I have a dog by now? I mean, it would have been hell yes. I at least have a dog. You know, yeah. I don't even have a kitchen.
All right.
So you know, it's how much are you willing to sacrifice for whatever that is? And I think that kind of the answer to it is a blend of both things. You need to truly appreciate the life and how you live it and people around you, which is something that I don't have a lot out there in LA. But at the same time, you know, I've only known a vision of working towards something that I myself said I wanted to work towards too.
Yeah.
So that's another, you know, kind of caveat thrown in there that I don't know what life would be like kind of working a, you know,
with that what if.
Right. Exactly. So I'm very happy with that. And I would also say that I'm happy with enough finding things out about myself and certainly the travels and meeting all sorts of different people with different perspectives has definitely helped me grow.
Oh, you've grown a shitload,
as a person. Yeah,
absolutely.
So, you know, not for waste.
Yeah, not for nothing, yeah. As they say.
That's the way to look at it, though.
Yeah.
Right? I think you made a great point by saying you got to do what it takes to get out there and do it. You're getting signatures. The people that come back with horror stories of, I went out there, I lost everything, and I accomplished nothing. Mm. Like, did you work as hard as you could? You're probably not going to tell us the truth.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I can imagine if one of us went out there and gave it hell.
Yeah.
We gave it absolute hell and it didn't work out. You'd probably try to take the lessons that you learned.
Yeah. And you would.
Than, you know, you wouldn't leave with your tail between your legs. You'd leave with new information.
And you'd leave because you want to, not because you had to.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
And talking about giving it hell too, from my personal experience of how LA works, is it was a very, not what I expected. The notion of kind of working very hard and you're going to get somewhere. And again, this is only in the entertainment industry that I've seen, but so many other variables are around there that I got bogged out. I mean, I went a solid 2 years creating some really good habits to really hone in on my craft. And when, you know, I wasn't getting footage back from things that I shot for students or whether nobody was taking interest in me or I was waiting for things to come out, all that time in between is was definitely the hardest battle of how do you stay motivated when you're getting literally zero external help. There's nothing, there's no reward system for gunning it out there, you know? And that
especially
is
not
far.
Instant rewards. It's
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, like if you're practicing basketball, you know, that's easy for me because if I see the
because you can see
going,
tangible results,
right? Yeah, I get, you know, excited. Oh, that's good and stuff like that. Like I was out there practicing for a very long time, with not seeing any external results. And meanwhile, too, in this particular industry, if you want to be on camera, you have in the back of your mind that it's an image-driven thing. You're like, oh, I'm wasting years, I'm wasting opportunities, I'm losing the ability
aging
to play
wise.
A high school kid. Yeah, yeah, because it's all, you know, segmented like that, and all that shit creeps into your head, and it can, you know, get you down. It's it's a reason why it's a cliche kind of grind out there, you know.
Yeah.
Why haven't you quit? Like, what, I've always, you
it's
know how
question.
I love asking people that?
Kevin always goes to that, because he, give me an example of a hero of yours.
Like Eminem. Eminem is one of my favorite artists.
Oh. He damn well should be.
The fact that he got through so much shit, people constantly saying, you're never going to do that. Like, why are you even wasting your time?
Yeah.
And now he's one of the greatest of all time. Like, how, there's got to be something in you that makes those, like, when you don't want to get out of bed, when you feel like you can't do it, those gears are still turning, you're still doing what you got to do, you're getting fucking signatures or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like, how, why has it just never been like, no.
Well, I'll be very honest, and I say I'm no way on Eminem's level, or if I were to translate it to acting, something like I don't know, maybe Tom Cruise with his kind of, you know, ridiculous, like when he did The Color of Money, really played pool 8 hours every day, or like he really flew the jet there, right? Eminem, from what I've understood about him, is he's always, ever since he first played that, you know, music, he's always, brain has been working to write different rhymes, and so I kind of like. Now, there's a lot of talent that doesn't get picked up. But anyway, to get back to your question why I haven't quit, very honest answer is the foot in the door phenomenon kind of thing. Like the longer I was out there, the more punishment that I took in shitty jobs and stuff like that. It was always kind of the back of my, well, if I leave now.
Right. It's all
you
for
know,
nothing.
Right. And you know, I've come this far. You know, how much longer am I going to get to do this? But also, to be very honest with you, I came to a point recently, about 3 months ago, where I was very at ease with quitting. I came to the point where I said, I know that I value relationships and life kind of in the now much more than whatever I was doing out there in LA. Because, again, to kind of go back to what I was saying before, is that if the way that I was living was so result oriented that even if the result came along and I didn't have any meaningful relationships and I didn't have anybody to share it with, if I somehow grew apart from everybody else because I was so isolated trying for this, you know, craft, the kind of like tortured artist kind of thing. Even the class that I was in, we would, you know, study great artists. A lot of them, you know, were very sad and isolated people. And like, you know, what's the classic, the painter that like never sold a painting, right? And then he dies and all of a sudden...
Was it Picasso? I don't know. It might have been.
I mean, I'm sure there was a lot of them. But yeah. I mean, like, that story to me was so, you know, sad on such a deep level because I could see it. You know, I was trying for it. And I was like, man, out of life, you know, I would really hate it even if I was all of a sudden, you know, if I was 35 and I made it and I was in all the movies and all that stuff like that, big, huge house and shit like that. But I had nobody that I cared about around me. Well, then what the fuck is the point?
Well, that's you knowing, being hyperconscious, knowing that
that's literally what that is.
Money doesn't solve issues. Like,
yeah.
You could have all the money in the world. If you don't have somebody that you love, you're going to sleep next to them every night. Like, that doesn't, if you prioritize that more, nothing will replace that. Nothing.
Like you always say, the janitor, if he's happy, then that's awesome.
If he's happy, yeah. Right. You, what you think you are is far more important than what you are. If you think you're an actor,
yes,
and maybe you're a struggling actor right now, if you think you're an actor, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
You live your life like that.
And see, and that's a great point that I think I would like to touch on for any listeners, is if there's anything that I would want to kind of like preach out there as a thought to roll around in your head, is that I feel like we are growing up in a culture that, you know, marketing is kind of the king, and you're pushed to reach this certain kind of super level of success or wealth or anything like that. And if you set that bar for yourself so high and then you kind of can never hit that and then you can, you know, start to hate yourself on that, I just don't think that that's the best way to live life. And especially for my own kind of turn in finding that out for myself, things in the industry have started to move a hell of a lot better once I was internally okay with saying, you know what, if none of those results happen, but I need to focus more energy on my relationships and being, you know, happy
being whole
with myself. Exactly.
Yeah.
And then it was amazing how other stuff started to move work and fall into place. And I feel like that might be a trap that a lot of kids are getting set into with all the social media that we have now. And we're seeing a lot of the polished product all the time.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's, that can be very detrimental to somebody like me with my mindset, that when I see things, I want to emulate.
Yeah.
And when you're seeing the perfection of all the time, you start to feel sad. Like, never. How many years did that take?
You're seeing that end result rather than... what I always try to tell people is that I wrote this. This is an excerpt from my audiobook. It basically says that the journey, the climb, and the process is where joy is found.
Mm.
And I don't care how great the end result is. Right. If you hate everything that you're doing to get there, then you're not living.
Yes.
And I do think there's going to be moments where the stuff we must do for our dreams is challenging and we really don't like it.
I feel you.
But I think that it should be 80-20 and not the opposite.
Yes.
I do think that a lot of people live their lives spending 80% of it doing something that they don't really care for to spend 20% with the people they love, like Ryan's talking about.
Absolutely.
And I think that we should reverse that. There's things that I have to do for my business that I just don't care about, that I don't want to do, like the logistics of actually creating a business and that kind of thing. But when it comes to like what I do on a daily basis, when it comes to fitness, speaking, podcasts, this is everything to me. If this was, you know, people call it a grind, and I understand what they mean by that because you got to work hard. But like, this is something that I love to do. And it, no matter how good the result is, I'm not going to have that regret because I loved it.
And that's amazing. I mean, take a lesson from people on their deathbeds.
Yeah.
What's the number one thing they say? I
wish
I didn't work
that
so
last
hard.
Week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's all true. And it's all the same. And I'm like, you know, we should listen.
Yeah.
It's so hard. Yeah.
Some people.
There's always this disconnect. When you get this fresh feeling when somebody passes away.
Yeah.
You know, somebody, not necessarily somebody you knew, somebody that somebody else knew.
Yeah.
And they just say, oh, I wish I hugged him more. I wish I told him I loved him more. And then you think about that for a day, 2 days. And then it's like, life just comes back and it's like, no, you got to live me again. Like, you can't remember that.
Yeah. Well,
you, it's hard.
Gratitude,
to
I think, is the solution to a lot of problems. I agree. That focusing more on what you do have rather than what you don't is the only way that you build on that. I think that in a weird way, we grew up in a culture that focuses so much on the end result, like getting straight A's.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter how we get there. If we learn, we learn. You know, and it's like all about the trophy. But I think that what matters far more than that is just realizing that what you know, life is comprised of seconds, right? Seconds turn into minutes, minutes turn into hours, hours turn into days, days turn into years, years turns into decades, and decades turn into the tapestry of your life. And if you don't like what you're doing in this second, analyze that and figure out one of two things. I either don't like this and it's not getting me in the direction of my dreams, or I don't like this, but it is getting me closer to doing more of what I want to do.
Right.
And I think that's critical.
Touching on your being grateful for what you have.
Yeah.
I try. Well, this actually just popped into my head, but I don't know how it's going to come out. It's an analogy.
Let's roll.
But think of it this way. Your being, you as a person, your hopes, dreams, you're a Jenga tower, right? Every single time you say, like, oh, I wish I had this, I wish I have that, you're pulling a piece out. Boom, boom, boom. Every time you say, I'm so grateful that I have this, you're reinforcing those pieces.
I like that.
And
analogy.
That's a strong foundation.
A strong foundation.
To circle back to building something.
Because it would be easy. I'm with a couple of giants here. It would be easy for me to say, oh, you know, these guys are like 6'1, 6'2. I wish I was that tall.
Yeah.
Mm. Boom. That's gone. I just pulled a piece out that I will never get back unless I figure out how to be okay with that.
Yeah.
Boom.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
You know, and then I could say, well, I have a great heart. I know for a fact I have a great heart.
Yeah.
That's up there. That's
for sure.
Welded in. That's not
going anywhere.
That's
what matters way more than our height anyway.
But I'm using examples.
So that goes into values and what
it
you value.
It goes into everything.
Like most of what Ryan's talking about being out in LA is that his values have shifted as he's grown.
Yeah, absolutely.
And those shifts, you know, what was true in the morning might be, you know, not true in the evening. In other words, like maybe he's moving more towards the meaning side of his life and what he values now is different. I think that's a great analogy, by the way, with the Jenga thing. Because eventually, if you take out enough of those Jenga pieces, it topples.
You're in trouble.
And then you become grateful because you're eventually, right? You bask in that pain. Picture those dark nights of the soul where you're like, oh my God, I wish, you know, I had not taken that for granted, right? Tragedy happens, right? Life strikes you. And let's picture, you know, some trauma happens. Unexpected thing. That's the Jenga tower falling.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're at ground zero and you build from there, usually on gratitude. That's why relationships break up, right? You break up and then you miss them and you realize, oh my God, look what I had. Why didn't you appreciate that while you had it? And we talked about that last week, or actually earlier this week. You know, the first 10 nights you sleep over with someone you love, and you have the woman of your dreams or the man of your dreams next to you,
yeah,
you cherish
pure
that.
Pure sex.
And
oh, no.
also true. You cherish that.
One
and then what
hope.
Happens after night 2000, though?
Right.
Right? Do you still... Because I always ask people, and you guys can answer for me, or for everyone, it's, what are the chances I'm going to treat Jenny the way she deserves to be treated and cherish her if I'm not first grateful?
No, it's not high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not high.
I always say whatever we fail to appreciate depreciates. In other words, if you're not grateful for the fact that you have a car and can get from A to B, then the chances of you taking care of that car to make sure you can still get from A to B are slim to none. And so it's a win-win. If you're more grateful, you're going to be happier. And by the way, if you're more grateful, you're more likely to build on that. You know, because what you appreciate appreciates. And not only does that mean in relationships, like if I appreciate Ryan and he knows that and feels appreciated, he's going to most likely appreciate me. Yeah. And that's just going to be this awesome cycle. But also what you appreciate appreciates, meaning when I believed it in him sophomore year about acting, like that was me appreciating him saying, you can do it, man. Like he appreciated, meaning he grew appreciation in an asset, right? Like he grew as a person. And he chased his dreams, and who you became out of that is what really matters anyway. And I personally, you know, I meet a lot of people. I live in a, you know, this small town still, but mentally I definitely don't. And you definitely have given me a perspective in so many occasions, just, you know, getting me to realize that, you know, the world's a lot bigger than sometimes I see around here.
Well, that's definitely a tribute to you guys. I mean, I had some forced growth put on me from my, you know, environment that I thrust myself into.
Right.
The fact that you can be in a very comfortable environment, I would say, from, you know, both of you.
Yeah.
and still, you know, want to continue opening up your mind and continue having, you know, new information come in and wanting to extend your empathy and understand more people, I think is absolutely amazing. And we should, you know, be pushing that all over the place.
For sure.
I think that's what we're doing right now. And I think that that's what you're advocating as well. And it's awesome to see how much you've grown and changed. There is one question that goes pretty deep that I want to ask. I personally, and I think that for a lot of your listeners, Kevin, and my listeners, when you do take this, a lot of people are like, oh, be your best self. But there's a big difference between like, I really feel like a lot of people, don't actually buy that. And there's even fewer who actually do it. And I think Ryan knows where this question's going. I think that one of the potentially seemingly downsides of this whole growth-oriented big dream journey is the sometimes the disconnect that it creates between you and quote-unquote average. And so the more and more you think big, dream big, and you know grow as a person, sometimes it can feel isolating, like you mentioned, from people who aren't. Mm-hmm. And that's their prerogative, as we said. If you're happy being a janitor, be a janitor. That's great. But to connect on that level, I think it's difficult to be the best of both worlds. I feel like I can connect with anyone because I've been at the lowest of the low and, you know, the highest of the high in terms of self-esteem. The question I want to ask you, Ryan, is that being out in the big city, seeing what you see, you've mentioned to me that you felt somewhat jaded at times. And when you do come back to a small town, you do realize that a lot of people, I think, that live here maybe don't appreciate it to the level that you do, and especially the trees and all that. My question for you is twofold. One is, what's your take on what I just said right there? And then the second one, and the more important one, I think, is what do you think, how have you overcome the disconnect between you and maybe someone who did stay in a small town and maybe is a little bit more, for lack of better phrasing, small-minded?
Well, I guess I have a little bit of an edge because my whole study in the craft of acting was empathy. So I genuinely kind of take an empathetic look on nearly every situation. So I find that you need to be kind of gentle with other people and with yourself, too. I think that a lot of, you know, I put myself through my own hell because I was so kind of result oriented and wanted it and, you know, was good at things in the past and had kind of a perfectionist mindset. And, you know, we're all human and, you know, you can put your best foot forward, but sometimes you have a shitty foot, quote my mom.
Yep. Ryan's mom said that.
And yeah, so I think it's really important to be kind of coming from a gentle place and to really try to take a moment to understand, you know, where other people are coming from. And again, my mind, you know, works the way that mine does. But kind of throughout the process of being like that, not too much surprises me anymore. You know, I mean, I love to talk about the lovely president of the United States right now. But even when all the blasphemy,
no politics, please.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
My point was just going to be that I can see how he got that way. You know what I mean? Like yeah. I get it. The dude thrown into boarding school, had a lot of money, parents didn't, you know, give him the time of day kind of thing. Like, I get how you can turn out fucked up. And I get how if you come from a small town and you have things kind of, you know, going your way, nothing's really changing rapidly. You know, I mean, I was driving by here today and I noticed, you know, like the same convenience store that was still there ever since I was a little kid, right?
You
know, North End Variety by that CVS.
This is,
you know,
gold right now.
Yeah,
yes, go.
And, you know, you can get lulled into that kind of sense of security and not realize that the world does change rapidly. And, you know, then your views can get kind of, you know, stale. Maybe you're not having enough outside perspective coming in. But I think, you know, I live in the left wing hippie, you know, big liberal capital there where you get a lot of stuff from thinking we're so all that. And I get how people perceive that. And I think, you know, we need to be gentle too in the mindset of, you know, well, if you lived in a comfortable place, kind of being fed the same stuff, you know, you tend to think a certain way too. And you know, we also got to be a little bit more gentle and bridge those gaps.
Yeah.
I think hope that answered your question.
Oh, it totally did, man. I love the fact that you mentioned empathy because I do think that no matter whether you're talking with your intimate partner or your best friend or your family member or your sibling, when there is disagreements, when there is a lack of understanding and compassion and empathy, I think that that's what breeds a lot of turmoil. And I think that hate perpetuates hate. And so, like, suffering perpetuates suffering. So, like, when I'm hurt, you know, we tend to, rather than seek to understand and to learn, we want to, on some subconscious level, hurt the other. Like, for example, if you get screamed at, you tend to
yell back.
Sure.
And rather than being like, I love you, you know, I'm here.
Because it takes a lot more work, man. I mean, it was work to try to find true empathy, and I was doing it through, you know, through scripts and.
What made you choose that? You said like that was your specialty. What made you choose?
I went to a lot of different acting classes and stuff like that, and the one that struck me the most was with the core was empathy, and I get it, you know, because you are trying to portray somebody else through their circumstances, and then that kind of is the act of empathy if you go into your imagination and truly try to take the time and imagine it, and then you find out that when you do that, and if you really commit to it, there's nearly no situation. Like, I never tried to do it with, like, I don't know, Jeffrey Dahmer or some, like, you know, ridiculous scenario. But mostly I found out that if you really try to do empathy, you can't help but end up loving that person because you
reach
a point where you are that person.
Interesting. Right?
You've sat with it enough in those circumstances to where you're believing that you are that. And then, you know, you can't really... hate after that.
I have a question.
It's very hard. Yeah.
Yeah. How does that, do you think that affects you positively or negatively in relationships or at all?
Oh, super positively in relationships. Like, absolutely. You're a better listener. Right. Come on. Yeah. You understand more things. The only thing that I would say negatively that it would do, and my mom is a prime example of this for me. It's kind of like a devil's advocate kind of thing.
Right.
Is that when you're too empathetic, sometimes when you're somebody's friend, you just want somebody there for you to be like, yeah, fuck them, dude. Come on. Yeah. That's total bullshit. You know, you're venting. You want somebody on your team. And when you get a little too empathetic, you always kind of... Yeah, you have that thing. Well, you're at this point, like, I know that. I don't give a shit, man. Be on my side for a change.
Yeah.
You know? So I would say then that's about the only drawback to it. But yeah, and then you know, I think that what's another drawback to empathy? Maybe that things wouldn't progress as quickly in some sort of like weird cutthroat sort of point of view, right? Like that, like this company may have done this because they were so, you know, yada yada, and sliced the competition and shit like that. And maybe if everybody was super empathetic, we wouldn't kind of progress. But I don't know, man. I really don't see many flaws to it. In fact, I would argue this. I think that empathy is what is the human spirit and separates us from almost anything else. Because even if you look at like plants, right, or any other life, its main objective is to survive and kind of multiply and thrive, right? Like plants are savages. You don't get enough sunlight, you're dead instantly, right? Animals, same thing, right? Polar bears or whatever, eat their own babies to stay alive, all that shit. And we seem to be, I mean, I've done a big study on dolphins and other things with our kind of intellect, but we seem to be the only species that would take people with, you know, like Down syndrome or other. I mean, I myself, when I was a child, my large intestine stopped working. So I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for kind of Western medicine saving me. And I feel like if we didn't have that empathy or that human spirit, you know, we certainly would discard a lot of us, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, you're,
oh, for sure.
You're too weak, right? Yeah. You're not like, we kind of, empathy, as wonderful as it is, certainly I think is a kind of a counterbalance to evolution in a sense.
I think it's part of evolution, believe it or not.
I agree.
This is going to go to a whole I also think
that it used to be survival of the fittest, and now the level of actually having to be fit for this life is
technology destroyed that.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like,
at least for the first world.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least for our country.
There are millions,
and
millions of people that don't have
for sure.
That obviously they are dealing with.
So
all of that
coming from a place of empathy in your relationships, you think has really helped you. One thing that I know you have struggled with in, you know, you grow a lot when you're out there. And like you said, it was forced growth. I think the term when we had a call one time, you said, you know, Alan, a stressed vine makes a fine wine.
That's right.
And I really loved that, because I do think that we need to sort of have some difficulties thrown at us to catalyze growth. you were thrown into a, you know, a giant fishbowl.
Rich spoiled people are such dicks.
Oh, I know. Yeah, exactly.
The fucking stress in your life. You think you're going to turn out to be a kind, compassionate person?
I would like to think with the right guidance, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you could. You're just, you know.
Yeah.
You're betting against human nature there.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, for sure. So when it comes to like identity and the power of self-labels, I wrote an article about that. Basically, what we, like Kevin mentioned, what we think we are is what we eventually work toward becoming on a subconscious level. What you just mentioned with acting is that coming from such a deep empathetic place and really putting yourself in someone else's shoes as an actor, like you have to actually, I used to think like, you know, acting is like, oh, you act like that person. No, you actually try to become that person inside.
That's what you strive for, sure.
And that's what you strive for. That's like real. You know, a lot of people think acting is like, oh, you play pretend for a living. When in reality, you're actually trying to like not play pretend.
Yeah.
You're trying to actually cry. You're trying to actually feel those things. And that will translate
us. Trying to bring
us
truth to those circumstances. Yeah.
Exactly. And so have you, and we've talked about this a bit, struggled with your own identity when you are putting yourself so deep into these other people's shoes? And what's your take on, you know, some of the actors that maybe go too deep down that dark road?
Yeah, yeah. It was a bit of a mind fuck for me when I tried to truly embody. One of the things that I was taught is to not judge any role that comes in. And then, you know, that the belief, I don't want to call it a science, that, you know, your mind, what you believe in, is as real to you as anything else, right?
Yeah.
And then when you truly believe that, and you realize that you can willingly erase or willingly choose to believe in nearly anything else, and that will kind of shape you differently, you then lose, at least for myself, I lost a little bit of footing of who I was, right? Because I started to question, well, like, shit, man, I'm spending all this time believing this stuff. You know, why don't I just believe this? Or why am I spending so much time on really shitty stories, like, you know, going and believing, because stories are written about some, you know, horrible, compelling human things.
Yeah.
And to sit with those and to really believe those for a long time was also very hard. So to kind of get back to your point is, I think acting is a very weird circumstance where the way that it is celebritized, if that's a word, and you're kind of held up on this pedestal when you make it, right? And it seems kind of all surreal, and it can seem like everything is, you know, given to you and all stuff like that. When at the core of the craft, if you're doing it, in my personal opinion, I don't want to use the word right, but I am right way.
Yeah.
It's a sacrifice. You're sacrificing your time and your mental belief, you know, you're sacrificing your a part of yourself. You're taking yourself, removing it for a bit, and embodying something else.
Yeah.
And that is a sacrifice.
Yeah.
And then you take people who maybe don't keep the thread back to reality too much, or can kind of let it get out of hand. I can only speculate. I am not these people, but, you know, Robin Williams, classic example, Heath Ledger, right, with The Dark Knight there. And those medicines and whatnot. I can't say what really goes on, but if it's anything like what I was trying to practice, I can imagine on that extremely elite level, that taking it to that extreme, you can, you know, get carried away and pushed into a place that isn't healthy.
Yeah. Well, people have split personalities where their subconscious believes in two different identities.
Right.
In
exactly.
Acting, you're forcing that upon yourself.
Yeah.
And I think having that thread to your own identity while still mastering your craft on this character must be a fucking challenge.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting to me to see a lot of the great actors and to see their different, like Meryl Streep, right? That's a prime example of somebody who seems to do it effortlessly.
Right?
She seems to be the same.
Right,
yeah. Like the same kind.
I haven't seen a lot of her movies.
Yeah,
believe
just
or not.
Like humble, just like, what'd you say?
I haven't seen a lot of her movies, believe it or
okay,
not.
Okay, fair enough. Well, you've seen her on stage getting Oscars, right?
Yeah.
I don't watch those shows.
What, 11 of them?
All right. But yeah, so you have somebody kind of like that who seems to be able to kind of run this line of empathy unscathed. And then you have other people like, you know, Dustin Hoffman was a good example of this like method actor who, when you heard stories on a set and stuff like that. Just like an absolute, you know, asshole in scenarios, or somebody who
Christian
turned
Bale.
Into somebody. Right,
right.
Exactly.
That rant or whatever.
Thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, me as an actor, like, I get it. Like,
yeah.
if
he went
if,
to that dark place.
And he goes. I mean, the Machinist,
yeah.
Jesus
oh
Christ.
Oh, my God. You saw the Machinist?
Right? I saw
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
You're almost going to kill yourself.
He's, like a,
troll.
He's a twig, man. Yeah. And then he went from that to Batman.
Yeah, he fucked himself up really
yeah.
badly.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
Badly. And we, with show prep and all that, we know how much that fucks
with
you.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Never mind shooting
next,
for 12 or 14 hours a day, however long.
Right,
you know?
Right. So just that kind of like overdrive and how different people handle it. And acting is its own weird beast, because I'm talking about this kind of element of the craft that I like to think about it. When I'll tell you this as an actor, acting on film is not an actor's medium. I'm sure many people have heard that before. It's a director's and editor's medium. You can come at it from whatever fucking way, and somebody else can make you look phenomenal,
yeah.
even if you aren't.
Yeah.
And somebody else, even if you are phenomenal, can make you look very
yeah,
subpar.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of actors out there, I'm sure, that take it on a much more kind of shallow basis or a much more technical basis, right?
Yeah.
Not trying to find this kind of like human truth.
More of the science
knowing,
than the art?
Right, exactly. Yep. Knowing like what angle my head needs to be at or what marks I need to hit or to do that so that
hashtag
visually
Mark Wahlberg.
It comes off. Marky Mark.
Marky
he's a visionary.
He's
I'll
killing it.
Yeah,
him,
for
yeah,
sure.
He certainly does. Savvy businessman.
I have one more. Like, so I was hoping that you could, because this is gold for people, just because I think coming from an empathetic place and realizing that you can put yourself in someone else's shoes
right.
in more than yeah. just like their circumstance,
yeah.
but in their identity
yeah.
and their belief system. It's like, if I believed what that person believed,
your
if
circumstances
I was beaten as a kid or whatever,
are just in the moment.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Who you are. If I had a bad day,
yeah,
I had a bad day. If I've had this ridiculously hard life,
exactly.
this is just like another day for me that's
yeah.
shitty.
Right. Yeah.
And you exactly. can see that and be like, yeah, I know you got a flat tire. It might not be a huge deal for somebody else, but like,
yeah.
you know, somebody just passed away. You just lost your job.
Right. You never know.
Yeah. And,
whatever
and,
it is.
And there are certain classic building blocks that when I would go through a script, you would do first, like whether you were religious or not, that takes you to saying, how
yeah.
did your parents treat you?
Mm.
Yeah. All those bigger foundation building blocks of your circumstances. You know, did you grow up and you were the middle child who never got any attention?
Right.
You know, how does that influence you? Or
yep.
you grew up and you had, you know, your brother die drowning or something like that. You know, whatever the story would dictate. But yeah, absolutely. And that would all filter in for sure. And
so I there's this great quote by one of my heroes, Tony Robbins. He says that divorce your story and marry the truth. Right. The only reason you don't have in your life what you really want is the quote unquote bullshit story that you tell yourself. We're learning about the power of story right now. When you say all of this and like, you know, Christian Bale, Meryl Streep, how they, you know, go deep into their craft. Some come unscathed. Some are very affected by this method acting. You have dabbled in all these different types of acting on your own, in your mm-hmm. own craft. Can you give us an example of, and I know that you and I have talked about this off air, but I think it's going to be huge. Give me an example of a maybe a dark story that you had to encapsulate into your own, you know, identity for a moment and like, what that was like, and maybe even go deep into like what you just said, like the childhood, like what you were supposed to believe
right.
about like what happened to you and all that kind of
like
thing.
How long does it take you to get into that? How long does it take you to get out of that?
Right? Seriously.
It's you know, the goal, the longer and the deeper you sit with things, the richer it is, as you know, you can imagine. I guess off the top of my head, I'll pick Streetcar Named Desire, right? I was Stanley for my class for a while. And the best work that I ever did was in my class because I would sit with it long term for like months at a time, right? So when you first go through something, at least in my kind of method, you take a quick sketch of all the things. And that can, you know, you can play with the sketch pretty well.
Okay.
You can take in things like your poverty, right? You're poor. That was one of the things in it.
You can also take in things that actually happened to you too, right? To like, because they're more, maybe not. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, that's a different method. That's a substitution. And some people certainly teach that a lot. But the way that I kind of grappled onto it was, if you're using substitution, then it's not authentic to what the writer's giving you.
Okay.
You know, as much as I could make myself, you know, whatever, cry or get angry or whatever.
Is that
I
more
wanted
of the science
emote,
approach than the art?
Taking
well,
your
own experience.
That one's just a different. I mean,
okay.
I wouldn't think that one's so much of a science approach, but it's just like that one, it didn't have as in my kind of fantasy of what I wanted to have the end product be. It wasn't as pure in a sense, right? Because the ideal situation is that you want to take in just the circumstances that the writer gave you, and you want to explore those, sit in those so well that you bring, that you lift those words and breathe life into them. And then that is, you know, the craft. If you were, taking a scene where you, I don't know, we're starting to break down because this was another one of my stories where you lost an arm in the war and you come back and you're, you know, seeing your wife again. She doesn't know. And you have this, you know, conversation and it's dictated that you break down in tears. You know, you could think of like your dog dying or something like that. And for the shot, you know, you might get the tears. However, they edit it. And when somebody else is viewing it, they can follow the story and sub that in.
Yeah.
But for how I was trying to train myself is that would be a disconnect of something that wasn't real, right? Those weren't tears over the emotion, of how am I confronting the fact that I am now permanently changed. I can never hug you the same way again. I can't, you know, mow the lawn. I can't do whatever man things, whatever was a part of my identity that I lost. And that should be the reason for the emotion rather than me sitting there playing some song on my iPod. Not to say the music isn't a great tool or anything like that.
Yeah.
And not to discredit what any other actor is doing. I mean, whatever, as long as the end piece does what it's supposed to do, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Just my own personal, what I wanted to get.
Well, that's the process. Like this that. Is to circle back. Right. Like you wanted to enjoy the process. That's the way you wanted to handle your craft. And you do believe that that's the most authentic way, which I think it's important for you to do it that way. Otherwise, chasing your dreams would feel like it's not on your terms.
Well, that was how I went about my dreams was I said, you know what, I want to get really good at this craft thing, and then the work will kind of come. I'll tell you right now, though, man, if you you give me a paycheck to get on a fucking show, I'll do whatever the fuck I need to get the job. Throw my own craft in the bullet. You got to put pepper in my eyes. Let's do it. I got to have an onion in the sleeve. Like, let's go, man.
Like in Friends episode, he has tweezers in his pocket.
Right.
Yeah, to cry
whatever it takes to get the shot
get it done.
So that car driver, what was his name, the first story that you were telling us that you went
Streetcar Named Desire.
Okay, yeah, go keep Stanley. Going down that road. Stanley, what was that story about? And like, what was the backstory, like the childhood, like that you, a little bit of what you had to embody?
Geez, man, you're putting me on the spot. I'm gonna look like a bad actor now because I don't quite remember that story to the fullest. I did a lot of stories. Poverty was a big thing that I sat with because it was very much dictated that he saw everything as kind of a fight.
Okay.
Right. And his shitty little apartment that he lived in was his kingdom. Right. And he's not gonna let anybody else fuck with his, you know, shit. He ends up raping, Blanche in the story. They made it into, what the hell was that movie's name? Forget that.
This is a character in a story, by the way. This is not a real human.
That's the lady who, you know, comes in with the sister. It's a classic play. But point is that I would kind of, for that story, I would sit down for, you know, an hour or two, or, you know, sometimes longer if I was in the zone. And I would sit there and I would go through kind of a shitty day, you know, living in New Orleans, right? It's hot, muggy, car, you know, mechanic, plumber doing dirty jobs with your hands. The best, thrill that I have is the poker night with the guys.
Yeah.
You know, I have my wife that was rich, that, you know, that I got, like I attracted her, I got her, you know, she's mine.
Yeah.
It was just an interesting place, you know, to come from and to really sit every day with that kind of thinking from your dick too was a lot about it. Cause the character was very much, you know, primal, like in his body, not like in his head.
I can already
head,
sense it. Just you
right?
going back there.
Yeah.
Like from you. Are you getting that
and
too?
The way like you're looking away, like so I've noticed like you genuinely make eye contact, you split it.
Yeah.
And during that, I saw you went, basically you were in flow. You just looked away and went. Like that's what I do when I go on a rant.
I
always notice where people are looking because it has a lot. You can tell a lot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Once you start looking like away and you just know you're tracking in your mind and nothing else is happening.
Yeah.
So I appreciated that. That was very good.
That was good, man. I could sense it. I could feel it coming out
right.
more
and
more.
And I also like thinking with your dick. I like the way that sounds. Yeah. I just like how you pulled it out of nowhere, man. I wasn't expecting it, so. Yeah. I thank you for that as well.
Kevin is hyper-conscious over here. I love it. You've become so much more aware over the last few years, man.
Yeah, man.
It's crazy.
It's because I hang out with
you've
people
grown, well,
that don't allow me to settle below my standards.
The dream team, you know, who you surround yourself with. Who was it today that quoted something? Eric Thomas, if anyone, he's a motivational speaker. Do you know who Eric Thomas
is? I do know who Eric Thomas is.
If you want to succeed as bad as you want
to
breathe.
You beat me to it. I should have known. You'll always beat me in quotes.
In quotes.
I am stronger than you.
Know your strengths. He
I don't
tweeted,
even think he speaks originally. Everything is a quote.
Everything's a quote. Yeah, I don't even need to quote anymore.
Give the sources at the end of every podcast.
I quoted one of his tweets. His tweet was like, basically, get around the right people and the right things will happen. And I basically, for whatever reason, I innovated off that. Innovated. Didn't steal. True artist over here.
Of flattery,
I said, you know what's fascinating to me is like people say whatever you want more of, get around more of it. And I say that. But the other side of that coin is whatever you want to become more, or whatever you want to get around more of, first you have to become more of it.
Mm.
And I think that's the piece that a lot of people forget.
Interesting.
Because if you don't embody it, the people that do aren't going to gravitate towards you. So it's this constant progression of like you became, you know, aware over the, and then like I noticed.
Right.
I take people that are aware take notice. Would you say that's true as well? Like you just notice, like that dude knows.
Right.
He's aware. Like, you know, they're not just kind of like on autopilot. Right. And so you became more of this type of awareness prior to me and you linking up. And then when me and you linked up, which I think was predicated on that catalyst,
right,
it became even more. So not only do you want to, I always say when you want more of something, like if you want to get fit, go get around fit people.
Right.
How do you get around fit people? First, you get fit.
So not necessarily, though.
Exactly.
You have to enter the arena.
You have to enter the arena.
Whatever the
arena
is.
Make sure you're in the right arena. Right. Like you're in LA, and you actually, we can touch on this too, because what's the time?
There's numbers.
Numbers, okay.
50 or 52?
So being in the right arena, I always say there's two master skills to life. Number one is increasing your own value in congruency to what your true north is, your dreams. The second one is making sure the correct people see that value. And you have to be in the right arena for that.
Right.
You know? And so, you know, you and I are doing similar things with higher consciousness stuff. You know, Ryan obviously has been exploring his mind and his web for years now. And that's why we're in this room together.
Right.
You know, like attracts like. But it had to start from our own initiative.
And the thing is, like, sitting down with somebody can be a very overwhelming experience. Like, I haven't seen you. I don't even know the last time we saw each other.
Yeah.
It's been a minute.
Well, yeah, for sure.
To dig within yourself and be like, just kind of put yourself out there. That's hard for people sometimes.
Do you think it's getting easier for you?
For me, it's nothing.
Okay.
I'm saying like for him as a guest.
Oh.
To come on.
Oh, for me, I'm no problem at all.
It's all about
this dude looks like he's fucking shaking.
He's shaking over there.
All about
we're asking him deep shit.
No,
man.
No, but I'm very
three-pronged
appreciative. I'm a very appreciative of anybody who's willing to come and just like
me
be
too.
An open book. Because I know a lot of people look at that and they're like, why, like, I would never do that, or how do you do that without feeling like people are judging you? It's like people are judging me, but that's the reason I'm helping them.
Yeah.
Because they're thinking of me, oh, he's the total opposite of me. Oh, I think that way too.
Yeah.
So I'm not crazy because I think that way.
Exactly.
But maybe let me try to figure out why I think that way. Was it my childhood? It was my last relationship. Is it something within myself, my insecurities?
Yeah, there's always a reason.
There's always a reason. And most people hide from the problem. So they never seek out the reason.
Yeah, and then that pattern keeps perpetuating
right.
the same result. I remember one time I was on camera 2 or 3 years ago. I was doing Snapchat journals and just basically on Snapchat talking about my thoughts. And I remember Ryan and I had a conversation, and this is only one of the many moments where he's given me such a critical perspective. He said, you know, Alan, there's a lot of things that change you, but very few that shape you. And it's like, make sure you're choosing those things.
Shit.
And the other thing that he said to me that day is, Alan, you are enough. Like, you don't have to put on a show. Like, you are enough. Just remember that. And I remember, I think that was, for me, and Jenny says that to me a lot too, is like, when I'm speaking, I feel like I have to, like, add so much value.
Right.
But I think that that's all rooted in...
fucking rooted.
That's all rooted. That's an inside
joke.
I'll
tell you after.
Yeah. That's all, you know, rooted in my own, maybe... insecurity that I maybe haven't spoken as much as I would have liked, or maybe I haven't mastered that craft
going
to the extent that I want to. I remember you and I talking, because like you're going on auditions, right? It's like chicken or the egg. The only way to get good enough to go on auditions is to go do auditions, but you want to you also want to be good enough first. So I think a lot of people struggle with that dichotomy. In other words, like, how do you get better at speaking? You go speak. Hmm. But you don't want to go speak until you're good enough to go speak. I fortunately, and you and I have talked about this, I fortunately have social media as a medium where I can speak to the camera and practice my craft on my own.
Yeah.
You can do that too, but it's a little bit different.
Yeah, acting kind of sucks for that, man. You can't really do it on your own.
Well, you can, but you can't really get the... You need somebody else for the reps.
To pitch and catch, yeah, right? Kinda. Off of, like, if you and I are doing a podcast, if you're doing a solo session,
I literally,
15 minutes.
Yeah, I'd literally rather do a solo one than one with you.
He'd rather... He has episodes called Scratching the Surface, which are awesome, but you only talk for 15 minutes. It's 15, like, that's 20. You practicing your craft, even if no one's available.
And that's a whole nother thing, because you really have to just bury yourself in your head.
Yeah.
Like, you have to, it's usually I'll see something and I'll feel it. I'll be like, oh, okay, I've just went through that. And you have to, like, kind of replay that over and over in your head, because you could say, like, talk about fitness.
Yeah.
Right? And some people would just say, like, oh, yeah, that's, like, exercise, blah, blah, blah. But we have so much going in these gears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That, like, I could talk to you about fitness for
three
an
days.
Hour.
Mm-hmm. I could do 3 days.
I mean, I'm just saying, like,
yeah.
right now.
Yeah,
but
totally.
It's important for me to keep those clear and concise.
Yeah.
Because it's just so, I just try to hone in on, like, all that shit.
Yeah.
And just get it, put in a ball, and just smash my nose off the microphone. Put it in a ball and just throw it, record it, and that's it.
I
love
then
that's gone.
The surface episode.
I appreciate that.
I've given speeches in my driveway alone. Literally, full speeches.
Shit.
The poems that, and I actually do want
to. Oh, boy.
Do the, you know, The Man in the Glass? That poem?
You've done several with me. I just don't recall them.
I do think that because of the empathy stuff, the self-identity stuff, the acting craft, and it's just whole conversation, that's come into
fucking
me a lot
do it.
Throughout this, is that
hammer
poem
it.
That I can recite. And I don't know if I've ever recited it for you, but I think that you'd love this poem. And basically...
Fucking hate poems, dude.
Ooh.
No, you don't. Ryan is a true artist. He loves it. And the poem goes a little something like this, and I think that this is critical for people to realize. And just to make sure I provide context... At the end of the day, what matters is your own self-esteem and your own self-love and being gentle with yourself. And that's what Ryan's saying, because you're not always going to get the results right away. The whole world isn't going to think
very
that the
rarely
path you chose is
the
right the one,
right?
And go ahead, if you want
to. If you base... So, an analogy that I was using in therapy...
Mm. Shout out to therapy.
Shout out to therapy.
Therapy is good shit.
Seeking
yeah.
help.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I have an anti-anxiety program in my room. Yeah, keep going.
But, you know, basically understanding that if you kind of have two columns, and one is your self-worth based on, you know, your internal voice, and then the other column is based off of externals. Externals clearly affect your internal. You know,
yeah.
If people that you perceive to be powerful and kind of in a stature above you, throw you, you know, compliments or likes or value you, that's going to increase
right.
your internal value, right? Same thing with the whole getting rejected. You go out there, you get turned down, it tends to kind of chip you down.
Yep.
And I think that's the key, is to try to build your internal self at some level where you kind of never really dip below a certain point, because you know that you have you.
Yeah.
And no matter what else, because the external thing, that's going to fluctuate throughout life.
Yeah.
It can never
yeah, right.
always
especially
stay
if you're
high.
Chasing big dreams.
Exactly. You know,
yeah.
nobody's Gatsby. Nobody's.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And even
line,
Gatsby,
you know
got rejected.
You got shot.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
No happy ending there.
So that's your. I think that, and I always use the Pareto principle. Pareto is a scientist back in, I believe, the early 1900s or the late 1800s that basically figured out that, like, 20% of our actions create 80% of the results. You know, for example, we probably only wear like 20% of our clothing. And so I think that a lot of people, you just talked about extrinsic motivation versus intrinsic
mm-hmm.
motivation, extrinsic self-worth and intrinsic self-worth. I think that we're out of balance. I do agree that sometimes we're going to be affected by circumstances, but I think that some people are completely affected
sure.
by them. When I look at how I've grown over the years, I think that's the biggest shift is, now my self-worth is mostly controlled by my own, you know, emotional intelligence and not by external validation.
Right.
And that's why I'm able to take the risks and be judged, right? Go
would
ahead.
Would you argue that at your age, that perhaps before your right brain develops at 25, they say?
I have no idea.
Yeah. Well, I think it stops. That's when it
fully developed.
Right, yeah, fully. Yeah.
So on your kind of youth, you know, growing up, I would kind of argue for the fact that perhaps in a certain age group, you know, you don't have that column on the left. The internal self column isn't even able to function. You know what I mean? And that's why I think the environment, you know, especially being talking about your past circumstances and what builds you,
is so
why
important.
That can shape you. Right. And put people in some, you know, horrible circumstances out there. I mean, you could go into things that happen in a first world country or things that happen in a growing up in war or something like that.
Yeah.
Where the externals might, you know, shape that. And you might be starting really low.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
on that internal.
That's a great point. Self-esteem and self-worth. You mean?
Yeah,
that's a great
exactly.
point.
Yeah, totally.
So I think, you know,
some people who seem to have natural exactly. confidence, and I would argue that I am one of those people generally.
For sure. Yeah, yeah.
And I think that that's a lot of what you're talking about.
Yeah,
I was showered
love,
with a lot of love.
Absolutely,
yeah, for sure,
man.
For sure.
Yeah, yeah. You were able,
and
to
I was believed
have that.
In too. My mom always said, "You can do anything you set your mind to."
Huge.
You know, she taught me the value of choices. It is huge. And yeah. I realized that more and more when I realized that that was not a given, and
right.
that makes me more grateful, which then makes me act on it even more.
Yeah.
You know, which is just this whole great perpetuating thing.
A whole thing.
Yeah, it's a whole thing, as they say. So for you who have worked a lot on trying to make sure your most of your self-worth is intrinsic.
Yeah.
How do you do that once your brain is developed to that point? And I do think that, you know, through your 18 to 25, even though it may not be at its full potential, I do still think that there's work that can be done there with some guidance. And I think that's why we do what we do. Like, I want high school students to know that there is hope. If you have low self-esteem, you can actually work on that. You can legitimately work on that.
Yeah.
So how have you?
Well, in my personal experience, it was kind of this. Even though I had the awareness of that, I was in an environment and some times out there that was not a good one, like really not a good one. And even though I had the awareness, I necessarily couldn't really change it. You know, I wanted to, I was trying on it, but I was falling short a lot. And then something would eventually happen where an external thing would give me a boost. And after that boost, once I had the awareness, I didn't let myself fall down as far.
Mm.
So that's been my own personal journey. Because I wish that I had, you know, with the amount
of... It's kind
of
a way around it,
right.
almost.
Well,
like, you know what I mean?
And I think it's like giving, you know, some, I don't want to say an excuse, but like being gentle with the fact that even though I had that knowledge and I really wanted to.
Yeah.
You know, if your environment is really bad... Perhaps you can't. Like, there've been plenty of studies with animals, people, and stuff like that. That, like, if the environment's fucked up, or like the rat immediately goes to like the drug or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But if it's not, then it's like totally cool without doing it.
Yep,
you know.
Yeah.
So I think that has to play into it. And again, I was in a kind of a very savage environment. LA is a very competitive, superficial, lonely. Not a lot of love. I didn't have any family or relationships. So for me, it was at a point where I knew that I had to lift myself up, but I don't want to say couldn't, because, you know, I feel like I was still maintaining a float, but
yeah.
It was very interesting to me that as soon as something really good happened and I was able to kind of catch that wave, but
yeah.
then with the awareness of knowing that I had to maintain myself,
yeah.
I never dropped down as far.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Everything seemed a little bit easier. And I don't know if that's attributing to age, just me kind of getting older and being more accepting, or if it was, again, being aware that I need to kind of supply stuff for myself.
Yeah.
But then reaching a point to where I had that fuel to supply myself with. Because before I didn't have the fuel. I wanted it.
Yeah.
But I didn't have it.
Mm.
And that's a really tough place to be in, especially in our current environment, when you see maybe a lot of other people having, you know, something that you want.
Yeah. Especially the highlight reels.
Right.
You know, that's
exactly.
why I keep my YouTube videos, my old ones up, because I want people to see that I was not a good speaker at one point. You know, I mean, maybe I had a natural inclination and I loved it. And I, you know, I do believe that anything that we focus on a lot, we tend to get really good at.
Yeah.
But I definitely want people to see when I was, you know, fat and had trouble with vices and was unhappy. You know,
and I
want to always have that there so they don't just see me now.
Right.
You know, I don't want to see just Tom Brady holding the trophy. I want to see him, you know, barely making his high school team, you know, because that gives people hope that that bottom is not where they're going
to
stay.
That's an intrinsic problem with what we have going on, though, is because who the fuck wants to click on and see that?
Oh, I know.
You know what
I
mean? So it's like you're never going to put and that's why I can only advocate for real human interaction. You know, so you've got
yeah. Okay. This is gold. This is fire, man. One thing I will say, Christian Guzman, so Jenny's really into him for fitness advice, and he's got an awesome YouTube channel with this. He's incredible. I mean, these are studio production level. I mean, these would fly in L.A.
They get those drones up. Yeah. That shit is real, man.
Like, just making it seem like this dude's living, he's right. 24, right?
Right.
And he's just ripped up, living the dream. Yeah, just 100, a million followers on Instagram. And he's a great dude. I take nothing from him. And he does add a lot of value. He does audio commentary with his lifts and teaches people how to do proper form. Love the guy. Hope to work with him someday. But when I looked at that, I remember being like, the mountain is so high, right? Because I do aspire to eventually do that type of stuff. And I went back and looked at his first YouTube video. And fortunately for me, he's like me. He kept it up. It's drastic. And it's like, that's the truth. That's where we start.
But how
you know,
many
that's
people,
not what we see, but that's where we
how
start.
How many people can actually get there, though, like mentally?
Right.
To the point of you're at, like, oh, shit. All right. Now he's got drones. He's driving a Lambo.
He's on a yacht. Like
that's
I
always say, like, he just didn't quit.
He just didn't
quit.
Yeah.
A lot of people tried to do what he did.
Yeah.
Some made it.
Yeah.
And a bunch of people quit.
A bunch of people
like,
did
quit.
Like,
that's
it. Yeah.
We were talking about that earlier. We are ultimately all our own bosses.
Yes.
No matter, at the end of the day, Ryan decided that my life, I'm not happy with my life right now. This is where I see my life, right? In order to do that, this is the part of my job I have to do. I have to move out to California. I don't have to, but I'm going to, for the best opportunities, move out to California.
Yeah.
Then his job became, I got to figure out a way to pay the bills while I go to castings, while I do whatever I do. The biggest difference is, man, most people aren't good bosses. They're just not.
Yeah.
They wake up and the machine wins most of the battles.
Yeah.
The machine is basically the voice in your head that tells you it's too cold, it's too early.
I'm too tired.
I'm too tired.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah.
And the rationalizations of like what, you know, but even though what I try to tell people is you don't know you love something because you always want to do it. You know you love something because you're always glad you did.
Yeah.
In other words, how many times have you gone to the gym and regretted it afterwards? I bet you it's rare.
I will definitely regret waking up at 5 tomorrow. When I wake up.
But after the gym, you'll be glad you went.
I'll be glad I went, for
that
sure.
means you love it.
For sure.
People think that they want... When we say, find what you love, chase your passions, I think that people believe that means, oh, if I love it, I'll always want to do it.
Yeah. No.
It means you're always glad you did.
Right.
Like, whether it's by Jenny or Rose or whatever, it's like, sometimes it's like, oh, like, you know, but I want to do it. And I'm always glad I did, though. You know what I mean? And that's just a simple example, because everything does come down to, like, the juice is worth the squeeze. And, like, trust that you're going to be glad you did.
But
that's what self-discipline is. And it's paying the price now for a promise later.
But most people don't see that. Most people have... If they're the business people, if they're the bosses of the company, they see them just staying at a tier one.
Yeah.
And they don't see the point of doing more.
Yeah.
You know, I'm happy with my life. Like, happy in quotes for those who can't see. I'm married. I got kids. Yeah, like, you know, we have sex once a week. She lets me play poker on Thursday.
Lets me.
And I'm not saying that it's only women who do this, because guys won't let their girlfriends go out because they're fucking too afraid they're going to find somebody else.
Exactly.
They find somebody else, good for them.
Yeah.
Like, be the kind of dude they don't want to leave.
Exactly.
Like, that's it.
Be the, I love
like, that's
that. It. I love that.
But the problem that people have is I feel like they know. Like, everybody wants better.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
How many people believe there's better? How many people believe that they can get better?
Yeah.
And how many people are willing to go through the battle to get there?
I think that it dwindles with each step.
Right.
The percentage.
Those yoga videos, man. I go back to that.
Yeah.
I'm doing 30 days of yoga with Adrian.
Yoga with Adrian. Yeah.
She's a beautiful soul.
I've done 3 days.
Alan's killing it.
Yeah.
First day. Day one has 3.7 million views. I'm on day 15, I think. It's got 1.3. The last episode, I went and checked. It's got like 700,000.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's not a coincidence, man.
A lot of people follow.
It's not a coincidence.
It's consistency. Yeah. It's lack of consistency. And I think that it has to do with what Ryan touched on at the beginning of this, which is when you don't see that reward, the habit doesn't stay. Like, I remember, I'll always go back to those studies where they put two monkeys in a room. The first monkey, they had him pull a slot machine and they gave him the fruit. It's a book called The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg, one of my favorite books of all time. And they gave him the fruit when he pulled the one that showed up. And that monkey literally got addicted to the slot machine. The monkey who didn't get the reward, didn't get any fruit, they just told him to pull it. They then put them in a room like a day later or whatever it is. And they opened the door and the friend monkeys were out playing with all their toys. Mm. The monkey that got the fruit was like just for
hammering
20 minutes, just no reward. They didn't give him anything this time, but he's just hammering it. And for 20 minutes, the other monkey got up and went and played. That's why it's such a struggle for someone like Ryan who needs to have faith in his own ability to get the promise. But when the promise isn't clear, and you're not even sure if you really want the promise.
I know, that's a
then you're not going to pay the price. Why would you? And so here's the thing. You got to know that your treasure is out there. Number one, whatever that treasure is, relationships, your dreams, right, are out there. Number two, that you will reach them eventually if you put in enough work. And number three is that it will be worth it. And I think most people are missing the third one. Right. Will it be worth it? Will it be worth it? If you don't know for sure it will be, like you're questioning for very valid reasons, then the chances of you following through are much slimmer. And if you aren't sure if it's going to be worth it because your values have shifted, then maybe you should shift. I'm not saying that, you know, when you say never quit, right? Yeah. I don't think him coming home would be quitting. I think it would be him reevaluating what his dream is.
Oh, for sure.
What his dream is.
I wanted to fight MMA professionally until I tore my shoulder out and realized this is just not feasible for
me. I
have one arm now.
A successful salesman until I realized that was terrible. you know, and I would still argue that I'm a salesman, but now I'm selling higher consciousness.
and that is one of the fears that, at least as far as acting go, that I can see, and I can see examples of it that are real of somebody who, you know, I hate to use the word failed, but somebody who, you know, went at it, sacrificed a bunch, didn't get it, and how they're like, and I remember there was a guy.
How are they like?
With some black and white movie. He got nominated for an Oscar, and he went on talk shows. He was an old guy, and man, was he bitter. Everything they asked him, he was like, "I've been doing this for, you know, ever years, and nobody's been, you know, saying to me," and so did that. And I've seen other people too, where they're really bitter, and I certainly do not blame them, because there is a tipping point, and you're fooling yourself if there isn't, that it comes a time where you've sacrificed whatever so much, and then if you don't get it, which it is a possibility out there, there aren't that many winning slots, you know, perhaps you cross that tipping point, and now your life is something that you hate, and you didn't want it to be that way. And you know, I think that's one of the potential pitfalls, which is not to, obviously, I'm not advocating for not trying for what you want to do or anything like that, but just find that balance of, like you were harping on, of make sure that you are at least enjoying the journey, that you at least are enjoying moments of your life. Because if you're like what I saw in that guy was somebody who did sacrifice everything, and he got it, right? He was nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But he was like 80.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And he was looking there like,
yeah, what if my whole life has been wrong?
Well, and coming at the point of view, like I deserve more. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
the entitlement? Like, that's the opposite of appreciation and gratitude, is entitlement.
But my whole point is, like, how could you not be like that? You sacrificed your entire life, and you got nominated for an Oscar, right?
Yeah.
But still nobody is appreciating you the way that you
perceived it would happen.
Or sacrificed enough to get appreciated like that. I mean, I can deal with my bartending job right now, right? I went through a period where I sacrificed as much as I wanted to be the best goddamn bartender at that place so I could get good enough shifts to pay my way out there and all that shit.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening? I fucking killed it, came out of the class first, all that shit. None of it really mattered.
Yeah.
They didn't really care.
But
I was never really rewarded.
But if you were
doing
it for the self-esteem rather than, I think that self-discipline is what creates self-esteem. When you want to go do something and your heart is telling you to go do something and you follow through, I believe you have a feeling of self-worth that is not extrinsic.
Even especially when you know you should do something. You know you should do it, and everything in you says,
yes,
I don't want to do this right now.
Yeah.
Those are small victories. The shower thing, dude.
Oh, I know.
10 seconds. I count from 10 to zero. On zero, I get out of the shower. I don't care if I'm the most comfortable I've ever been. I have never failed once doing that, ever.
Yeah.
And I know I won't. That's literally a thing in my head where I refuse to fail. I will not ever stop doing that.
I did that when I was on the dock. I really wanted to go swimming, and I have this ridiculous fear of snapping turtles because when I was a kid, I stepped on one heading over to Marky Jacobs' house. And I did the 5-second rule. I counted down from five, and I forced myself to jump in because I don't want that rule to go away.
Right.
I use it all the time.
Right.
I used it when we were doing 80s dumbbells in the gym.
Yeah.
And maybe we should transition.
Subtle brag.
Yeah. That's actually not.
I know.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, when people were doing 90s.
When people throw numbers out, I automatically just have to
just
talk
assume
to
that it's but yeah. So let's circle back here. So, I do think that. To piggyback on what you were saying, Ryan, if it's something you're unsure is going to be good for who you are and like who you want to be, like if you're doing something to get a result, like an external result, like money or fame, like I do believe that even if you get that, you're going to feel empty almost no matter what, because that's not where fulfillment comes.
Right.
You're going to be happy for the moment, but that's not long-term. What's long-term is relationships, right? Who you become, the journey you embarked on, looking back on your life, being happy. I have a flashcard in my pocket that has the top 5 regrets of the dying that we talked about on the last podcast or 2 podcasts ago. We're hammering them out.
I know, man. I love
loving
it.
Loving it. And the number one regret is I wish I had lived a life true to myself and not what others had expected of me. So you do have the benefit of going out to LA, chasing your dreams of being an actor. That was intrinsic. That was what you wanted to do. And other people told you not to do it. I know a lot of people did. And you did do that. If your choice is to come home and that's on your own accord and it's not because other people are saying you should quit, it's because you think that this is no longer what I value, this is no longer worth the sacrifice, and maybe find a way to integrate and do both. I mean, I remember you acted in college in theater. I went to a bunch of your plays, and I thought it was awesome. You loved every second of it.
Yeah, it was great times, man. Happiest times of my life.
Right. Hell yeah.
Part of a community.
So when you say the process versus the result, I would argue that when you were acting, you loved it.
Oh, absolutely.
Is that still the case?
Well, you don't get to do it.
Yeah.
That's my whole point of LA. Yeah, if I was working, I'd be singing a fucking different goddamn tune. But I went from an environment where I was doing 2-3 shows a semester. You know, I'm always around it, right? I had classes and stuff like that.
And
I moved
you
into
had a
an
girlfriend
environment
who was an actress
where,
as well.
Yeah, yep. And I went out into an environment where you're not allowed to step into the room without good representation, the rooms that you want to be in.
Yeah. The arena.
Meanwhile, you have to pay an arm and a leg for essentially a gym membership or classes to kind of like keep your craft going, right? You got to pay to fucking read with people. Yeah. And so that eats at you because, you know, it's fucking expensive to live there.
Yeah.
And to do all that. And the opportunities to actually get to act are so far and in between. That's why it's like, you know, it's extraordinarily difficult to be trying to hone and practice this craft by yourself and then have just very sparse and rare opportunities to actually get to do it.
Yeah.
And that's what I was kind of getting at. Of course, if you're getting to do what you love to do all the damn time, then you're doing what you love to do. That's going to feel
true.
A lot better.
True.
But a lot of the acting struggle for most people is exactly what I'm going through, which is as a... You just don't get to do it as much as you like, man. And you got to keep grinding and keep...
But that's it, though. That's the shit, man.
Yeah.
That's the shit.
No, it is.
That's the dip.
That's exactly why they all have very similar same stories. I remember, what is a great one? Peter Dinklage. You don't watch Game of Thrones.
I know who he is, though.
Well, somebody, he was in an interview or whatever, and he said that somebody came up to him and been like, oh, my God, you're so lucky. You know, you have to do your soul lucky. He's like, I didn't feel lucky when I didn't have power for a month, you know, sleeping on the fucking floor when nobody would take me and I was doing Santa's elf shit in the fucking mall and, you know, all that type of stuff. So,
He's got the market corner, though.
This podcast took a slightly cynical...
Market corner now for damn sure.
This podcast took a slight cynical turn.
You gotta balance it.
You gotta balance it.
Real talk.
Yeah.
So, I got a question.
Yeah.
This is kind of deep, I think, but where are, so on a scale 1 to 10, motivated, chasing dreams, like happy with results, where are you? like on a scale of 1 to 10, where you thought you would be or where you hoped you would be?
I thought and hoped that I would at least have been auditioning for network role, paying working actor shit, right? I'm just there now where I have representation to where I am auditioning for real stuff.
Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Yeah, hell yeah. Small victories.
I have also reached a place mentally where I've let go of all my results. I am very much in a very open place out there. Just kind of, you know, I still have my lease ends, I think, in February. You know, I have a very well-paying job. Very fortunate. Picked up another one that's probably going to be very well-paying, too. But yeah, and just, you know, doing things when I can. But I stopped the kind of like harshness on myself of you're not there yet. You know, you're not getting the auditions yet. You don't have good enough representation yet. Your friend just got a series regular on Dear White People. You know, where's your series regular? You know, how are you gonna?
Well, that's all the self-talk.
Do
right?
all that. Exactly.
You're just beating yourself up. That's not helping anybody, especially not you.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And the point is that I let all that go, and I said, you know what? I'm still here. I'm still obviously gonna try to do what I want to do. I'm living there,
of course.
But that's no longer my priority. My priority now in my life is nurturing and fostering human relationships, which I woke up one day realizing that was a problem, that I wasn't doing that. I built a lot of bad habits of a lot of self-sufficient. I have to do this for me. I have to, you know, I can't do that. I'm working on me.
Yeah. I know those feelings. My
yeah.
friend.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. This is fire.
And I had to put the pause on that a little bit because I kind of woke up and I was like, oh my God, I don't have any, I'm not nurturing any, like people that I do know. Like I was never sending a hey, how you doing, or like hey, do you want to grab lunch today?
Right. Yeah.
That was never coming out of me. I was happy when I got one from somebody else, but I wasn't watering those plants. So I've kind of switched that over, and I'm like, all right, I need to make sure that I'm happy now. And then
you seem happier.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And like I said, you know, I'm not gonna talk about any future things because I'm gonna quote some Lil Wayne here. Real G's move in silence like lasagna.
Lasagna.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know
here
that.
We go.
Yeah. I know
now
that.
They're killing me on the quotes.
You know, so I don't want to jinx any upcoming stuff. But as soon as I dropped that and I started to kind of live for relationships, I've been meeting a lot more like-minded people that are able to help me. And networking is worth more than all the other stuff I was doing before, whether I like to admit it or not.
So you just touched on something huge because you are coming from a place of wholeness rather than... Because I remember you told me a couple of years ago, we were on the phone, I think this is a year ago, last summer, and you said, you know, Alan, personal growth is personal, and like people don't... We were talking about how people don't spend enough time in solitude. Mm. I would argue that you went out of balance on the other end of that. And I have too, by the way. Kevin was alone in New Hampshire for 2 years. And the growth actually stagnates when it's too much.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's always a balance.
Absolutely. Because you're right, man. You do definitely need the solitude to figure out your own shit. But you put yourself in that for too long. I mean, you're drying up. You're not. Yeah.
But look at the way you approached it. You were like, everything. I'm trying so hard and everything else. Like, I'm trying so hard to get this ship sailing. But I'm not doing anything here. Your relationship that you wanted wasn't because you were lonely. Mm. It wasn't for any of those reasons. It was because you just kind of forgot about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, that's a better place to be than most people who are like, I'm just lonely. You know, I'm insecure. Like, I just want somebody around. I just think it would be better for me to have somebody.
That's the opposite balance.
Right.
Yeah, that's...
You were, like, the other way completely. You're like, oh, shit, I should probably start dating.
Because on one side of the
I'm going to probably start seeing...
I'm seeing
real people.
Yeah. I'm honestly, though, I'm in the same area. Like, for the last 2 years, I've been traveling.
I know.
15 out of the last 24 months. More than that. 16, 18.
Well, traveling's great, though. Traveling is...
Yeah, but for work. For work. So every week, I've been gone. Like, I've been... I spent like 6-7 months last year in New Jersey.
Oh, that's hard to...
It is. Yeah. So I come home for like a day or two and it still is really hard for me to prioritize like, oh, I'm going to go out on a date Saturday. Mm. Why? Well, maybe it's because I don't see the results. I'm expecting the results and I'm not trying to put in the reps. I just want my max bench right now. I don't want to put in the reps. That could have something to do with it.
Yeah.
But
interesting.
It's a struggle. It's a struggle to balance everything.
Yeah.
And like you said earlier, like trying to be the best version of yourself.
Yeah.
Like that's, you said that some people don't, you don't think some people believe that?
I don't think that some people, I think they like understand intellectually the idea of it, right? Right. The prefrontal cortex picks up on it. Like, oh yeah, be your best self. Of course, right?
Right.
But like when it comes to actually doing what's necessary to do that, whether it's spending time in solitude, but not too much.
It's all consciousness.
Or spending time with growth-oriented people, but not too much because you don't want no solitude. It's very different, I've noticed, someone who actually lives and breathes it versus someone who intellectualizes it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, there's a big difference between someone who wants to be in shape and someone who's in shape.
Right.
Or in the process of getting in shape. Yeah. It really is a doing. If you're not doing it, you don't know it to the level of someone who is doing it.
Right.
You know? And that's really what I meant by that.
And it's no coincidence that you're the happiest person. You're the happiest version of yourself when you're the best version.
Oh, totally.
What's the best version of you? Like, what is a day in the best version of you? I guarantee it does not end in a negative way at all.
Oh, right. No.
We have been living our best versions.
Yeah.
We've been waking up and hitting the gym at 5:36.
Oh, it's been amazing.
Getting breakfast, deep thoughts, deep talks.
Yeah.
Podcasting, deep thoughts, deep talks.
Exactly. Growing. It's like, contributing.
This is what I want.
Yeah.
The life I'm living right now is what I want, but I want it on the next level.
Oh, of course.
I want to pull up in something different. I want tomorrow to be doing something, going on a skiing trip, not going to work, whatever it is.
We're living, man. It's been hard work, but I think hard work is really great when you're doing stuff that you really care about and that you know is leading you closer to who you want to become.
For sure.
And like I always said, and I used this in my last speech, and I mentioned you and me going across LA. Mm-hmm. If you're going to drive from, you know, let's say the greater Boston area to LA, and you and I did this, you have where you are now, you have a destination. People are focused on getting to LA. And I would honestly argue that you and I were too focused on getting to LA. We did it in, what, 4 days? That's record time. Yeah.
We had some other variables.
Oh,
we were trying to do it on a budget.
We were trying to do it on a budget. That's true. Subway everywhere. But it's not getting to LA that matters. It's the journey that we were forced to embark upon in order to get to LA that matters. It's the relationship that we built on the journey. It's the process where, you know, I think that the destination is going to feel empty when you hated the process. But I think the process is going to feel empty if you don't have a destination that pulls you.
Why?
Like, if we didn't want to go to LA and we were just aimlessly driving around the country, I don't think it would have had the same meaning to us. And the journey wouldn't have been as amazing. Unless that was our result, to do that. You see what I'm saying? Like, to just go. Yeah. So I think that that's a good analogy for dreams.
I know, you could pick a spot on the map and end up in Boise, Ohio, Idaho. And you could drive out there and there could be nothing. There could be a potato factory and you just leave.
Yeah.
You might have had the greatest times you've ever had on that ride out there.
Yeah, but you wouldn't have felt compelled to do it.
Right.
And it wouldn't have made the journey as meaningful. Unless your goal was to not have a result. In which case you would just enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean,
I think that's
a hard analogy to pull, because I feel like if you're taking a road trip, at the bottom line, at least the road trip is the, you know, result that you want, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I would never have driven across the country had we not had a compelling reason to do that.
Oh,
that's kind
of
my point.
Sure.
Create compelling reasons to be the best version of yourself.
Right.
If you don't have a strong enough reason.
And you know what the best version of yourself would do.
And only you know that.
Like, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
The dog shits and you look at it and you're like, I don't want to do that right now.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave it and somebody's going to step in it. Not the best version of you.
And that leaks into your self-esteem.
For
I'm
sure.
I'm going to pee real quick.
Yeah, do it.
The more battles you, we'll say battles you fight. Like daily things you can practice daily discipline with
daily
that you
discipline.
Don't follow through with.
Yeah.
That's like the Jenga thing.
Jim Rohn, I was listening to a book earlier, and he basically said this. He said, I was in a room of psychiatrists. I was giving a seminar. I found it fascinating because I never graduated college, and I'm giving the seminar to people who all have PhDs. And what he said is,
powerful pee stream by Ryan. I can't, you guys might be able to hear that.
Well, he had asparagus yesterday.
Asparagus.
And we've been drinking water this whole
podcast.
Sorry
to interrupt you. I want to ask him what he wants to accomplish before he dies.
I like it. Do it.
Go ahead.
Do
continue.
It. And what he was saying is, I had the audacity to say, you know, I think that I have a pretty good grasp on what hurts people's psychology more than anything.
Mm.
And they were all like, you know.
Who are you?
Who are you, right? And he said, I think it's doing less than we can. Like
Makes
knowing
sense.
That being less than you know you can be will always erode your self-esteem. Like you said, if the dog craps and you don't feel like picking it up, when you go and pick it up, believe it or not, that does leak into your psychology. Jim Rohn calls it the ant philosophy. How much food will an ant collect during the summer for the winter?
These questions always get me, man.
As much as he can.
See, I never would have guessed that.
You know what I mean? Like, how tall will a tree grow?
As tall as it can.
Ah. And so I think that that's really important for all of us to realize. And those are the differences is that if you know you're living below your current potential, trust me, I've been there. It's going to erode your self-esteem.
I think a lot of people are.
I know. And it sucks. And how many
people do you know that are like great artists or great photographers?
I know.
And it's like, honestly, if you just set your mind to that for a year.
Yeah, I know.
If you had, like, we were talking about this the other day. When Alan is a billionaire, I don't want to be a billionaire. That's a lot of work. When he's a billionaire, I told him he should give out like $100,000 grants to people that have great ideas so they can just skip college if that's their prerogative and start a business.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is, pay off their debt so they don't have to work and they can just, when you're doing a bodybuilding show, all you do is eat, sleep,
right,
and lift. That's all you do. And what you're watching, it's bodybuilding stuff. What you're listening to, motivational.
Yeah.
It's not a coincidence you get in the best shape you've ever been in.
Right?
It's not like, a coincidence. Right? It's because you're living it.
You're living and breathing it every day. You wake up with it. You go to sleep with it. And that there's no wonder why you're just shredded.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
When you work 24 hours straight on a project for school.
Yeah.
Like, that's... It's going to be good work if you study properly.
Yeah,
like when you focus all your time, energy, and effort onto one thing, you're most likely going to become pretty fucking good at it.
Oh yeah, for sure. Especially if you do it consistently over time.
And you're doing it smart.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, man, that's the life hack.
Yeah.
Like, that is the life hack. Figure out how long you need money for before you can achieve your dream. Save up that money and fucking quit your job. That is what I'm going for.
Kevin Palmieri, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah.
Don't do that. And if you do, don't call me and sue me.
I am not a professional.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not a professional. I just play one on a podcast. It.
So you wanted to ask Ryan an awesome question.
Ryan, I want to ask you a question.
I do want to circle back to that poem because it's such a theme of everything we talked about here.
Alan, I know you want to spit your poem. We'll spit it.
Oh, we're going to spit it.
Ryan, what do you want to accomplish before you die?
And
I gotta put you on the spot here.
Humdinger.
No, my answer is gonna be really cheesy.
That's all right. Mine is too.
I want to be a dad.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I want a family more than I want anything else.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So simple.
Hell yeah.
I like that.
I like
that.
But
yeah, but I have, you know, decent. I mean, I'm still alone. Single.
Single at the time.
You know, so I have standards that need to be met for that. But that's my goal, man.
I like that.
I like it too. That's absolutely a goal of mine as well. Hell yeah. Beautiful things. So I think that the theme, every podcast seems to have had like quite a theme to it. And I think this one is a lot about self-worth and being gentle with yourself and shooting for big things, of course, and growing, of course. Yeah. But like remembering that like your happiness is kind of like within yourself and within your control more than you realize. And to take back control of that, even if it's what Ryan said, which is like when you do get that boost and ride that wave, don't let it dip below that.
Yeah.
Because that's what's true is what you decide is true, you know? And so this poem, it's called The Man in the Glass. And I just wanted to recite it because I think it's so relevant to this. And I think I've never shared it with Ryan before, so I think he'll like it as well.
I'm ready. I'm all ears.
When you get what you want in your struggle for self, and the world makes you king for a day, just go to the mirror and look at yourself and see what that man has to say. For it isn't your father or mother or wife whose judgment upon you must pass. The fellow whose verdict counts most in your life is the one staring back from the glass. Some people may call you a straight-shooting chum and call you a wonderful guy, but the man in the glass says you're only a bum if you can't look him straight in the eye. He's the fellow to please. Never mind all the rest, for he's with you clear to the end, and you have passed your most dangerous test. If the man in the glass is your friend, you may face the whole world on the pathway of life and get pats on the back as you pass, but your final reward will be heartache and strife if you've cheated the man in the glass.
I've heard that before, but still, every time I hear it, it's like...
Was that yours?
Oh. No.
Ryan, you know better than that.
Peter Winbrow, a guy by the name of Peter Winbrow, I believe it was in the early 20s. During the Depression, a lot of great poetry came out for obvious reasons. And I think that goes hand in hand because that's when the man in the glass matters most, when tragedy happens.
Right.
And you have to find that self-esteem from within when circumstances get tough. So I think that's the takeaway of this podcast, at least from the conversations Change Lives End, is just your... The real happiness is in your own web. It's in your own perception of what you are. And if you're not seeing the world validate you, just remember that you can find happiness in gratitude and focus more on what you do have rather than what you don't. Jim Rohn basically says, focus on what you have while in pursuit of what you want. Wanting more is a beautiful thing.
Sure.
But needing it is a real neurosis.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
The man in the glass, I've had times in my life where I've looked in the glass and been disappointed. Now I'm very, very happy with who that man is. And if you're not, it's time to get hyper-conscious.
Mm. Oh, look at that plug.
Ryan, you got anything you want to talk about before we go?
Oh, geez. To anybody out there still listening, you're a trooper, man.
Oh!
For a while.
Fucking burned it.
Burned him.
I mean,
it's a short one, an hour and a half.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
this is short.
Got, geez. Another hour and a half in me.
My goodness. I could go on, too. Yeah, no. I guess just, you know, life... life is difficult, and you know, don't lose hope. And like what Alan said, your mind can make a heaven out of hell and a hell out of heaven. So just try to do the best that you can, and make sure to keep people that, you know, love you close, and try not to take them for granted.
Amen.
Beautiful.
To that.
Beautiful.
Amen. To
what
that.
What a way to end it, ladies and gentlemen, from the hyperconscious side. We are we're gonna sign off. Alan, you can do your send off.
This has been absolute fire. Thank you so much, Ryan, for
yes.
coming on.
Thank
we
you
appreciate
for having
it.
Me, guys.
Dear
I really
dear friend
it.
Of mine forever and always. Mm-hmm. And yeah, definitely cultivate what I call companionative love, which is basically when you're in pursuit of big dreams and goals, the people that support you along the way, those relationships will be the most meaningful. And yeah, thanks for listening. Glad you're a fly on the wall for all the awesome stuff that Ryan
was
able
very,
to impart.
Very good.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
A lot of great stuff.
Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Adios.